Hello everyone out there, welcome to the CoinParts podcast where we talk about blockchain, crypto, trading and investing. And today I've got a very special guest, Cameron Dickey from B2C2. B2C2 is one of the world's largest OTC liquidity providers in the crypto space. They're currently headquartered in London. They're one of Europe's only regulated crypto liquidity providers, and they launched back in 2016, opening offices in Japan and the US. So Cameron, thank you very much for joining me today.
Great to be here. Hi, Jeff.
So yeah, let's kind of jump straight into it. This story we're going to talk about today, and I suppose the crux of the topic is Wirecard and its implosion and insolvency. You know, kind of give the viewers a real quick update on kind of what happened.
I mean, it was a pretty interesting time. Certainly, if you grounded it in the context of the German market, the German regulator as well, that has always prided itself on having very fiscally astute companies. You know, this isn't the sort of thing that tends to happen to some of these German names, but it appears as though some of the subsidiaries of Wirecard were not reporting accurate numbers to the main company. It made it very, very difficult for the auditors to ascertain how much cash the company actually had in the bank, which it appears, you know, if you saw in the news that they announced that they were essentially missing 1.9 billion euros. You know, that's not exactly pocket change. When that disappears, it tends to drag the company down with it, not just reputationally, but, you know, the company is now being sold off in parts, which has come as a pretty big shock to the business community.
So that was kind of more like what they call like creative accounting to bolster their balance sheet and bolster the books to make it look bigger than they actually are.
Yeah, absolutely. But when it's something of that size, you have to question the not just the culture within the company, but that there appears to be something that is structurally wrong than how they're being audited, but the culture around, you know, whistleblowers, for example. You know, we all thought that Enron was potentially a bit of a high watermark for that level of corporate corruption, and in actual fact we've seen that you know, it's done nothing but led to continued shenanigans at boardroom level for some of these companies.
For sure.
They do genuinely think they can get away with it.
I suppose, you know, what were really the red flags that kind of shone out? Is this something that was, you know, visible at a 20,000 foot level or a 10,000 foot level, or is it just bound to come out, you know, at a time when, you know, pressure pot, tension point, something just kind of came out and broke the news? Or is this kind of, you know, is this foreseeable?
Well, I mean, you have to look at the corporate structure. You know, how far do tentacles go for a company like that? Because every time you have a subsidiary and then a subsidiary of a subsidiary, and everybody is reporting numbers, you know, reporting standards are not uniform across country to country. You know, some of the banks that they held money in was in the Philippines. I can't say I'm suitably clued up on reporting standards and corporate governance in that country. But if there isn't a uniform way to do that, it's easy for, you know, people who want to do something to cover up certain situations like this. You know, it becomes slightly easier for nefarious activities to happen when there's a huge chain of command.
And do you think this is a failing of regulation or a failure of auditors? I mean, really, they're not one and the same. They're completely different, you know, in terms of the way that the public would view them and the way that the businesses are structured. But like, they are supposed to work together for this kind of thing.
Yeah, completely. I think you have to look at the auditors first, because regulators, as we know, are you know, retroactive. They're not proactive. Something will happen and the regulator will then put together rules and a reactive approach to make sure it doesn't happen again. But it usually takes something like this to get the regulator's attention. Auditors are, you know, looking at reasonably real-time information in the form of fairly recent accounts, or as real-time information as you can get from a company of that size, and yet they just completely missed it. You know, if you can't have complete faith in the independence of your auditors, then there's something seriously wrong with you know, that side of the business cycle. You know, accounts are taken for granted by investors. How can you form an opinion on a company if the numbers that are being shown to you, especially a public company that's listed, you know, the investment community has to take that information at face value. And when it doesn't, you know, when that information has to be completely wrong or based on lies or just invented numbers, a lot of people lose a lot of money. And I think one thing to note is, you know, regulators will only get really involved if retail lose a lot of money in a scenario like this. So when it's a listed entity, you know, and stocks are held in people's pension funds and things like that, and you find that a regulator hasn't done as much as they could to make sure that these companies were playing by the rules, you know, that's where you tend to find a slightly more heavy-handed reactive approach.
Yeah, for sure. And I suppose that's the biggest kind of, I suppose, at that level, like you mentioned, it's a publicly listed company. You've got pensions, you've got, you know, professional traders, you've got hedge funds, all the way down to the, you know, your retail level investor. But it was the number of businesses that were built on their platform, which I think is where, you know, the ripples have really been felt. You know, it's not just crypto companies that are affected. Maybe it's the, you know, the loudest kind of lightning rod part of it is that, you know, a lot of card providers and crypto card providers and crypto apps that were based on this back of this technology or based on the back of the business from the lead company or the subsidiaries, you know, have a very noisy presence in the market anyway, you know, maybe more than fintech and more than traditional businesses. So it's almost like it rippled the crypto space really, really heavily.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, certainly crypto.com amongst a number of others, they were using some of the payment rails to back things like their crypto-backed credit cards and some of those other products. I'd like to think that there's certain parts of the industry that would love to use this as a whip to beat crypto again and somehow connect the two. Even though, let's be honest, you know, Wirecard's misbehavior has absolutely nothing to do with the crypto companies. You know, they're all they're stand-up organizations, and they weren't implicated in anything with regards to what had actually happened to the company. You know, when you dig a bit deeper into the details, it turned out a significantly larger part of their revenues was coming from a very, very small number of clients that actually concentrated in the adult entertainment and gambling sector rather than anything else. It appears as that was the best. And then the additional clients that they added from then on, those numbers were inflated to look a bit more than actually were. But the company made its name originally by banking to, you know, parts of the adult entertainment industry that traditional banking wouldn't touch.
That high risk category that crypto falls into as well.
Yeah, exactly. Even though, you know, there's a clear separation there between the business that Wirecard was doing with crypto and specifically payment processing providers and crypto card providers.
So then the two sides of that, you know, for lack of the pun, coin, is you've got the acquiring side and the issuing side. Now, the acquiring side, they can swap that business overnight, and a lot of businesses will have multiple acquirers that they work with. You know, you have your payment gateway, you have a number of acquirers bolted onto the back of that, and sometimes you'll load balance between two or three of them. But the issuing side of it, you know, the actual issuance of those cards, some of these companies now have to then, you know, reinvest in sending cards to every single one of their users, and that's going to be an expensive exercise.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that at least is testament to the adaptability of some of those crypto businesses, though, is, you know, it's very difficult to have a systemic risk for some of these players when they're not overly reliant on any one payment rail platform to be able to facilitate their service. You know, unlike traditional banking, where, you know, as we saw, for example, you know, Wirecard will never be a Lehman's type event for crypto, even though crypto has relied on Wirecard to a certain extent for some of those aspects of their businesses. And I think that, again, is testament to you know, the decentralized finance aspect of things, where if you have a player like that becomes so systemically important, you know, it takes a number of players down with it when it does go. Fortunately, they were never allowed to grow to such a significant level, and crypto was never that over-reliant on them, because, you know, you can take out a number of those payment processors. Traditional payments will start to feel the squeeze, fees will probably go up, you know, there'll probably be antitrust rules coming into play. But for crypto, you know, you never really have that issue.
No, exactly. And I think that was the exact point I was going to get to, is that if it was a, like you say, like a Lehman's moment, you know, we are so, you know, spread out, globalized, that it takes, you know, more than just one failure to really take out, you know, an entire part of a network. And do you think there's any particular, you know, failing on the regulator's behalf, you know, or the German regulator and their fintechs and how they kind of keep that, you know, that part of their industry very, very secure?
Well, firstly, this has not shone a very flattering light on BaFin. When some of the original news stories came out about how Wirecard were reporting a number of their accounts, there are specifically two Financial Times investigative journalists who, as soon as they started reporting this, the German regulator actually investigated them and accused them of working with short sellers and hedge funds to try and talk down the share price.
Wow.
Now, you know, that they talk about pride before a fall. You know, that screams of not just arrogance from the German regulator, but also complete blind faith in, you know, your own national interest and your own sort of flag bearers for industry, when actually regulators, they can't have boundaries in terms of, you know, certainly along nationalistic lines. They have to look at their own companies in a very objective light and make sure that if there is a case to answer, they're looking at it. You know, so this happened under their nose, and the company wouldn't pay attention to any of these reports. Sorry, so the regulator wouldn't pay attention to any of these reports and actually went after short sellers and other people in the market, rather than thinking that anything could have been going wrong at the company itself. So yeah. I think there needs to be a little bit of a top to bottom approach there at BaFin. I think they need to be far to move on their own companies and at least have, you know, a closer means of inspecting these companies on an ongoing basis, rather than just you know, waiting for something to happen and then acting retrospectively.
Yeah, it's like a defense instead of offense, like you say, reactive as proactive, right? And I mean, with that sort of, you know, that outlook you just mentioned on, you know, it can't possibly be wrong, it's the short sellers, it's the hedge funds, it's all the bad players, and I suppose compared to the UK, where the FCA is still, you know, finding its feet with some of the regulations that are in place. You know, we've got the new AMR 5D rules and everything else that's coming into play this year. But is this kind of an opportunity for, you know, the FCA and the UK to do something a little bit more different and maybe a little bit more ingrained with, you know, the UK crypto and blockchain scene, and really kind of step ahead of kind of what's not just having Wirecard, but maybe with that whole kind of, you know, fintech industry in Germany? Is there something they can kind of take from that and potentially become more of a leader in the world?
Yeah, I certainly think there's an opportunity. I think two things will happen now. If you look at what the regulatory reaction is in Germany, you know, I hope Switzerland, probably one of the more forward-thinking regulators, certainly around the crypto space, it's taken them a while to offer a regulatory framework, but we're now seeing German companies being able to apply for that regulatory license and then offer their clients, you know, crypto products, which is great. However, it's a risk product by regulatory standards, and I would hope that it doesn't cause the regulator to pull back from really expanding into those areas that it would be keen to avoid, you know, any future regulatory issues. So, you know, there's an opportunity created by that vacuum and that void. You know, the FCA has shown itself to be pretty passive when it comes to the crypto space, but at the same time, because of the strength of London's traditional financial sector and the amount of talent drain from that area towards crypto, and the fact that a lot of people who operate in crypto, certainly in London, are that, well, they come from you know, traditional backgrounds where they have a natural predisposition to being regulated. So you know, the whole crypto space in London has certainly an ethos and a general level of regulatory acceptance in terms of how you operate and how you interact with each other, that I think that there's certainly an opportunity for London to continue to build on that. But I don't think anyone benefits in a potential economy the size of Germany, you know, going back to the dark and not expanding into and innovating in these new areas. You know, crypto needs a strong Germany, if that makes sense. You know, you need to have a lot of those parts of the industry moving towards and innovating in that space.
Understood, yeah. And you just mentioned there about, you know, about talent drain going from traditional finance into crypto. Does that mean that we could see, you know, a more professional sort of capital allocation, and not just on, you know, like VC funds and regular investors, but, you know, traditional banks and even high street banks, you know, bolstering up their innovation teams and their innovation spending to try and, I suppose, you know, take care of that opportunity that they're presented with, you know, the talent pool going into crypto, a regulatory framework which could be very, very progressive. Do you see that kind of happening in London specifically?
Yeah, absolutely. I certainly think that Wirecard has highlighted, you know, one of the key risks in any crypto organization, which is counterparty risk still. You know, that is still a huge, huge part of how we interact with each other. You know, you find that companies are continuing to beef up, and rightly so, credit analysts and compliance roles to make sure that, you know, when you're dealing with companies, you've got a really good idea for the sort of counterparty risk that they pose. So I think that has it's been highlighted again. You know, I'm sure crypto.com and some of those other guys that we're dealing with, Wirecard, will know what to look for, you know, in terms of future providers that they'll use. So I think you know, the whole industry will learn from this, and that will be a good thing.
That's really cool. And I suppose you specifically in the crypto and OTC and liquidity space, what's kind of the opportunity for you, and what are you guys looking at for the near future, I suppose, in the UK and in Europe?
Well, I mean, a number of people will have got their fingers burnt in this scenario. I think for us, you know, we can offer the fact that we are the only regulated liquidity provider in Europe. You know, when they face us, they face a very transparent organization. You know, we are a company that posts its accounts on Companies House, as we have to, as well as making sure that we are as transparent as we can be in every area of the business, because we have regulatory oversight, which gives a lot of our clients an enormous amount of peace of mind when they deal with us. I think that the business that was going through Wirecard is only going to continue to grow. You know, payment processing, certainly corporate B2B payment processing, is going to be a huge, huge business over the next few years, as corporations realize waiting 3 days for fiat currencies to land, you know, at a potential customer or other part of their business is just simply not an effective use of time and cash, you know, and having what will eventually look like, you know, maybe M2 or even someday M1 money rails, you know, moved on to crypto or some form of stable coin, it will just be an absolute game changer for a number of these companies. So being able to provide the liquidity in that regard is something that we're working towards. And with our recent new investor coming into the company, it's given us a bigger balance sheet to be able to do that.
And I mean, at the moment, this is just a stat that I kind of keep an eye on every now and then. But I mean, it's currently July 2020. Currently, they say that, you know, about 70 to 85% of crypto volume is in trading, and about the rest of the, you know, the rest of the percentages for, you know, remittance and payments. Where do you kind of see that growing in the next kind of 12, 24 months?
Well, a lot of it will come down to regulatory environment. You know, companies are not going to go it alone, or they're very unlikely en masse to do anything that even if it isn't regulated, they're not going to take the initiative. Even if they see, you know, because we speak to them regularly, we explain what the cash benefits, the capital benefits are of moving to, you know, a crypto B2B payment form. But without the regulatory oversight, you know, these are going to be huge companies with huge risk management boards and boards of the company that, you know, are accountable to shareholders, having to trying to explain to that those different levels and C-suite and AGMs that you want to move to crypto is still, you know, an absolute no-no. The conversation is becoming easier and easier. You know, certainly I think one thing that COVID has done is it squeezed quite a few companies so that they are now looking at any area that they can make a cost saving. And if that includes, you know, the remittance functions that the company has, whatever it may be, you know, that's certainly another opportunity for crypto to come in and play its part. But again, it's going to need a regulatory tip to be able to really have those conversations meaningfully, because you'll always be able to find one or two people at board level who are open to what crypto has to offer in the future potential, but getting an entire board to pass a resolution, you know, to get sign off by shareholders, that's still, you know, a bit of a tricky thing to get done, but it is becoming easier.
Let's hope that there's, you know, the narrative kind of upgrades and changes, that the, you know, the opportunity of not being in crypto greatly outweighs some of the risks. But, you know, it'll take time to get there. So I think that's a really good point. We're going to finish the podcast here today. I mean, any last words that you want to share with about BTC2, a particular part of the space you're operating in, and how people can get in touch?
Well, I'm always looking to speak to, you know, hedge funds, HFTs, prop desks, quant desks, businesses who are looking at crypto but don't have a real idea of how they want to enter the space. Do get in touch. Reach out to us. We'll be happy to have those conversations.
Awesome. So yeah, thank you everyone for watching the show today. This is the CoinPass podcast. We talk about crypto, blockchain, payments, and trading and investment. If anyone wants to get in touch, you'd like to be a guest on the show, drop us an email at podcast@coinpass.com or drop us a tweet at CoinPass Global. And one last time, I want to thank my guest, Cameron Dickey from B2CT, for joining us today. Thank you very much.
Thanks for being here. Cheers.
Not a problem.